The question of why Babe Ruth never became a major league manager typically receives little treatment. It's thought of as a footnote in Ruth's career, one which is barely worthy of consideration. And that's because it's easy to accept a simple narrative about Ruth's quest to become a manager as being the entire story. Namely, that Ruth's immature behavior, difficulty following rules, and inattention to detail made him a poor candidate to be a major league manager. It was encapsulated by Colonel Jacob Rupert's perhaps apocryphal comment, "How can you manage a team when you can't even manage yourself?" Now, of course, Ruth's personal failings are part of the story. Robert Kramer, an authoritative biographer of Ruth, said Ruth was one of the great natural misbehaviors of all time. Bill Kerrigan may have denied Ruth opportunities to pitch as a rookie because of his poor behavior. And Ruth's 1922 season was a disappointment in part because of his excesses. And the bellyache heard around the world in 1925 has become the stuff of legend. And though he may have shaped up a bit later in his career, it is well known and understood to teams that Ruth was unpredictable and resistant to structure. But even with that history, Ruth could have become a manager on a few occasions, with two of them being more plausible than the others. And sometimes it was bad fortune that took away the opportunities. And sometimes opportunistic owners pulled out the rug from under him. And sometimes Ruth's poor judgment did him in. And there also are suggestions that Ruth was denied the chance to manage because of owners' fears that he might try to integrate the game or to advocate for players' rights. Still, even with it all, it's reasonable to infer that Ruth was closer to being a manager than many believe. So the first question is, why would Ruth want to manage in the first place? There were two reasons. First, he was a baseball lifer who presumably saw being a manager as the capstone of his long and distinguished career. And many of his contemporaries became managers, and he felt he deserved to be among that group. Ruth watched as Tris Speaker became a manager, and Ty Cobb became a manager, and Rogers Hornsby became a manager, and Eddie Collins became a manager. In fact, from Ruth's rookie season in 1914 until Miller Huggins died in 1929, 12 players who eventually entered the Hall of Fame, as Ruth would, either became full-time managers or player managers. And 12 other players, including Gabby Cravath, previous home run king and rival of Ruth, also became managers over the same period. And during that same period, with Joe McCarthy being one notable exception, virtually every major league manager in the World Series, on both the winning and the losing sides, had major league playing experience. Now, Ruth often crowed when other players got jobs and he didn't. There's no doubt that competition with his peers was part of the calculation. Then there's the question of why anyone would want Ruth as manager. I'll offer you three reasons. The first is that he would be an enviable drawing card, someone with unparalleled name appeal, and would increase gate receipts. Christy Mathewson in 1916 became a manager, and Cincinnati's attendance was up 20% over that year. The second reason is that hiring stars as managers was common. There was a belief that the best players understood the game better. And that notion proves an inspiration for teams to hire Tris Speaker, Ty Cobb, George Sisler, Dave Bancroft, and Rogers Hornsby, among others, as managers. And the role of being a manager was different at the time. Bill James in the Bill James Guide to Baseball Managers from 1870 to today notes that the job description for a manager was different in the 1920s. Managers built up networks of associates. James said it was a personality business, and there was no bigger personality than Ruth. As teams started forming front offices in the 1920s, the appeal of Ruth as a personality-driven manager, someone who recruited players, became less important. And the third reason is that Ruth had matured with time, or at least some thought. John Kieran in the New York Times on October 22, 1933, after noting Ruth's transgression, said, "Babe Ruth isn't like that. He once was. He did practically everything that he was charged with and possibly a few more things that never came to light. But for 6 or 7 years now, there's been another Babe Ruth. The second one is one who might make a fine manager. Kieran listed the qualities that were required of a manager at the time and said that in 1933, Ruth possessed them all. He cited enthusiasm for the game, smartness, that he never made a bad play on the field, that he had leadership qualities, that he was always cool and courageous when the pressure was on. And fellow players, he said, would follow Ruth, even when Ruth was going in the wrong direction, a good sign for a manager. They looked at him, as he said, as the grand master of his own trade. Hence, the notion of Ruth as a manager at least had plausible underpinnings. Now, I'm going to offer to you 9 instances when Ruth might have been able to become a major league manager, and there may even have been more. The first one was with the New York Yankees in both 1929 and 1930. Or as I say, never a chance. Now in 1929, when Huggins died, was really the first time when Ruth indicated that he wanted to be a major league manager. Ruth, then age 35, definitely wanted the position. According to Robert Creamer, Ruth, quote, very much wanted to be named manager and was not happy about it when Bob Schalke, who had some coaching experience, got the job. And in 1930, Ruth was again passed over, this time for Joe McCarthy, an experienced manager, someone with whom Ruth would grudgingly get along, but with whom Ruth thought he was better than as manager. Ruth asked, quote, why did they have to go to the National League to select a manager? Now, in truth, Ed Barrow had no confidence that Ruth could become a good manager. He'd watched Ruth for many years. He knew his many weaknesses and limitations. And Barrow had Rupert's ear. It certainly wasn't going to happen in New York. And Ruth didn't have any coaching experience, unlike Huggins and McCarthy, who had managed before, or Schalke, who had been a coach. And Rupert made a habit of hiring no-drama baseball people, like Barrow. Ruth simply didn't fit the mold in New York, and he wasn't going to manage there. Now, in late 1932, the Red Sox might have been an opportunity. Ruth was still a force as a player, and there were at least rumors that the habitually woebegone Red Sox wanted to bring Ruth in as a player manager. The Sox had gone through 5 managers in 6 years, and Ruth offered a potential stability. Mayor James Curley had emphasized to potential buyers of the team how attractive Ruth would be as a manager, and he was still a good player. Now, Bob Quinn, who was the team's owner in 1932, he may have flirted with the idea, but he also may not have had the money he needed to pay Ruth at the time. And there's a Washington Post story where Quinn told Yawkey that these rumors of hiring Ruth were just rumors. Ruth wanted to remain a player with the Yankees anyway, and the Yankees hinted at least that he was in line to succeed McCarthy. And it wasn't really true, but it motivated him to stay. The Yankees gave McCarthy a 3-year extension through 1935, stringing Ruth along. And it's fair to say that the Yankees didn't play fair or straight with Ruth in telling him that he wasn't going to get the job in New York, which likely cost him any real chance he had to get the job in Boston, if it was a real opportunity in the first place. Now to the Tigers in late 1933, perhaps his best chance. Actually, it was his best chance. Now, many news reports confirm that Ruth and the Tigers had mutual interest. The team's attendance had fallen during a 75 and 79 fifth place finish under Bucky Harris, and Frank Navin saw Ruth as a player manager, with Ruth's impact being at the gate. Navin wanted to trade for Ruth and asked him to come to Detroit to discuss it. And Ruth was scheduled to leave on a barnstorming tour to Hawaii, and he left rather than seeing Navin first. Even Barrow, who was ready for Ruth to leave town, thought it was a mistake. Ruth thought he had plenty of time. Navin, though, thought he was being blown off and wound up purchasing Mickey Cochran from Philadelphia and making him player manager instead. The Yankees were indeed eager to ship Ruth elsewhere. And as Lee Montville in the Big Bam said, Ruth had to be handled delicately due to his great popularity. Quote, Rupert and Barrow mostly hoped the Babe would fade away without a lot of noise. But the opportunity was close. In the Washington Post on November 6, 1934, nearly a year after this episode, there was a story titled, Ruth's Travels Were Costly to His Managerial Hopes. And it said that Ruth and the Tigers had, quote, agreed to a terms of a contract. And even so, Ruth went on to Honolulu. Lee Montville said that he went to the World's Fair in Chicago and then on to Los Angeles, where he got on a boat to Honolulu. And he could have called, but he didn't. But he had to catch a boat, Montville said. It was suggested he take a later boat. He sailed with a boat, and so did his new job. And when there are various stories about it, one of them is that Ruth had called from San Francisco, awakened Navin in the middle of the night, and that the opportunity went downhill from there. Regardless, the Washington Post said that Navin had, quote, definitely obligated himself to Ruth. And even though nothing was in writing, Ruth believed he and Navin understood each other perfectly. Montville said that maybe Ruth just didn't know what he was supposed to do. He'd never applied for a job in his life, and he presumed that people were supposed to come to him. But it all worked out with Cochran, and Ruth's best chance as a manager was over. Then there's the possibility of the minor leagues. By 1934, the Yankees were eager to get rid of Ruth. Barrow thought that by sending him to manage the Newark Bears, a farm club of the Yankees in the International League, was a great next move. And under the pretense of him taking over for McCarthy, Ruth could hone his skills there. And even if he fouled it up, as Barrow thought he might, Ruth would be gone without backlash. But Ruth rejected it, even if it might have helped him to become a major league manager. "I'm a big leaguer," he said. "Why do I have to go down to the minors first? Cobb and Speaker didn't." And Ruth, always comparing, noted that the Senators had made Joe Cronin a manager only the year prior, someone younger and without experience. Again, it was Ruth's stubbornness at play. And Ruth's wife was against him going to the minors, and Ruth felt he was gambling with his managerial prospects by so doing. He'd also had said at the World Series he would only take a major league job. And because of pride and rigidity, Ruth closed that door. Then there's the Senators in 1934. It seems to have been considered rather early in the game, and the Tribune said that Clark Griffith offered Ruth $15,000 plus a cut of the gate receipts, and that it fell apart when Ruth wanted $30,000. And Griffith, after meeting with Bucky Harris, said while he believed Ruth was out of managerial timber, he's definitely out of the picture as far as the management of my ball club is concerned, and never was in the picture. The Senators clammed the door quickly, and perhaps it was just a courtesy consideration. And what really happened is unclear. Perhaps, probably Griffith didn't want him if he had other potential better managers available, but it likely wasn't a very serious opportunity. Then there's the Philadelphia Athletics in 1934. It seems kind of silly to think of now because Connie Mack went on to manage into the 1950s. But it seemed serious enough at the time for the Chicago Tribune to announce in November of 1934, as you see there, report Ruth likely to succeed Mack as A's manager. Mack, then 72, had bonded with Ruth on an exhibition tour where Ruth was his right-hand man. And it was said that Mack would announce his retirement upon his return. It was clear that Ruth would not be back with New York. He declined to remain what he called a weekend player, meaning a pinch hitter. And Mack allowed Ruth to effectively be the manager of his all-star team on his foreign tour. And reporters surmised it was enough of a crash course that Ruth would become palatable as manager. The Chicago Tribune called Mack the, quote, retiring manager of the Philadelphia Athletics. Mack was quoted as saying that Ruth would be the manager if Philadelphia could pay his price. Now, Rupert had said it would be no cost if Ruth was just to be a manager, only a cost if he was to be a player manager. But as things often happened in Ruth's managerial quest, things turned on him abruptly. And by December 12th, Mack denied the managerial job was set for Ruth. And on January 9th of 1935, Mack said he'd like to manage until he was 80, effectively shutting the door on Ruth with Philadelphia. And then on January the 14th, Mack said Ruth was a natural-born leader of men if there ever was one. But then only a few days later, on January 20th, Mack said he would consider Ruth only in some other capacity. And Mack denied that Ruth was ever considered to be his successor. There were changing stories and perhaps a bit of sleight of hand, but Ruth probably never had a real chance in Philadelphia. Now, Ruth went on to the Boston Braves in 1935. He signed there on February 26, 1935, and only 2 days later, the Associated Press linked him to the managerial job there. A story said, quote, Ruth confirmed the general expectation that he will succeed Bill McKechnie as full-fledged manager of the club by 1936, if not sooner. And as usual, it seemed like a good deal at the beginning. Ruth said, quote, it's been definitely decided I will take full charge of the Braves on the field next year. My main ambition is to manage a big league club, and I'm going to Boston with the understanding it will be fulfilled. Team owner Emil Fuchs said there will be, quote, no handicap to Ruth taking over the club, at the end of 1935, and Bill McKechnie would become the general manager. But the winds changed the next day. The vice president of the club said Ruth's ascension to manager was no fait accompli. Said Ruth he would would have to show he merited the post first. And, quote, judging from Ruth's past career, we can hardly consider him a managerial candidate now. And Fuchs, after saying there was, quote, a distinct understanding that Ruth would manage the club, said it would, quote, only happen if certain conditions developed. It was pretty clear that Fuchs was hedging his bets. He went on to suggest that Ruth may not even want the job. And it's clear now that Fuchs did not act in good faith. The team was in dire financial straits and wanted Ruth to draw people to the gate. Said Montville, this is all Fuchs wanted, an attraction. He wanted Babe to ride the elephant. Fuchs offered empty promises, like Ruth being a vice president or getting stock options. And Montville said, quote, the other parties took Ruth's desire to be a manager and bent it to their needs. The Babe never knew what hit him. It was so overt that when it was done, Ruth called Fuchs a dirty double-crosser who would double-cross a hot bun. Now, in Brooklyn in 1938, Ruth had been out of baseball after the Braves since 1935. In 1938, the Dodgers were treading water under Burley Grimes. Executive Larry McPhail and team captain Leo Durocher had the real power. Now, Ruth, in June of that year, attended Johnny Vandermeer's second no-hitter as a spectator at Ebbets Field on June 11th. McPhail was apparently enraptured with the reception that Ruth received, and he thought he could bring in Ruth to help at the gate. Brooklyn released a statement saying that Ruth had not been promised the manager's job. The coaching job still was thought to be a stepping stone to a managerial position somewhere. But Ruth's performance in Brooklyn dimmed his prospects. He tended to ignore signals. He, quote, spent most of the time waving his arms, clapping his hands, and shouting encouragement. Gerald Eskenazi said that Ruth could barely get the signals straight as first base coach. But beyond that, the combustible relationship with Leo Durocher, born of dislike going back a decade, ruined things. They were very different personalities. Ruth called him the All-American out, and depending on who you believe, Ruth may have stolen his, said Durocher had stolen Ruth's wristwatch. Eventually, there was a flaming argument with Durocher, and basically Ruth called for a hit-and-run play to Durocher in extra innings. Durocher felt it was too risky at that time of the game. Durocher got mad, not Ruth, and the scuffle left a mark under Ruth's eye. And so the mocking talk of Ruth being unable to give the signals, combined with the dispute with Durocher, underscoring Ruth's lack of discipline, scuttled Ruth's managerial hopes there also. And even if he didn't throw a punch, Ruth took the blame for the fight. McPhail sided with Durocher, and Babe's time with Brooklyn was effectively over. He didn't last a full season, especially with Durocher taking over as manager. And Ruth, after that, might have gone to the American Association to work his way up, but he didn't want to. And there's really no evidence that Ruth did anything with Brooklyn to hone his managerial skills. There was at least one mention after this of Ruth being considered, at least in a cursory fashion, for the St. Louis job after Brooklyn ended. And he was really having to go down toward the bottom of the barrel for it. The St. Louis had been 55-97 in seventh place in the American League and had Harlan Clift and not much else. And there's no indication that that went anywhere after the initial contact. For practical purposes, the Brooklyn position was the end of Ruth being actively considered with any seriousness as a major league manager. Then there's the question of race. Julia Ruth Stevens claimed in a 2014 New York Times interview that Babe was denied a managerial post because he would have wanted to integrate the game. Quoting from the piece, Stevens said that what truly prevented Ruth from a shot at managing was the fear he could have brought in black players years before Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 1947. She is firm in saying that racism kept him from managing. The article suggests that some circumstantial evidence for this contention might be that Ruth befriended black athletes and celebrities, that he brought Bill Robinson, a tap dancer and actor known as Bojangles, into the Yankees clubhouse and had him with him at the 1932 World Series. Robinson was also and would go on to be an honorary pallbearer at Ruth's funeral. There's a 2017 OZ.com article that asks in its headline, was Babe Ruth shut out of coaching because of racism? It cites baseball historian Bill Jenkinson, who is the most active proponent of this theory. It says, quote, without definitive proof, Jenkinson is convinced Ruth didn't get the job because Commissioner Judge Landis and others close to him knew that if hired as manager, Babe Ruth would have openly advocated to sign black players. I asked Jenkinson about it, and in an email which he gave me permission to share with you, he said, first, please understand that I don't have hard proof of anything. I just can't think of a plausible explanation other than race for Babe Ruth's failure to obtain a big league managerial position. All the usual arguments sound specious to me. And a book published just last month by Edmund Worley titled Breaking Babe Ruth alleges coordination among Landis and other team owners to block Ruth from becoming a major league manager, largely because of the widespread belief that Ruth was chipping away at their control through his independence and self-promotion. As Worley said, what the baseball establishment feared from Ruth was disorder, a challenge to the reserve clause, the possibility of rival leagues, player empowerment, etc. And one example is Ruth's barnstorming in the 1920s was considered to be in defiance of the owners. And he says that Ruth was threatening because he complained about the reserve system and having to sign uniform player contracts, making him a potentially attractive and potent leader of an incipient players' rights movement. He alleges also, with the media being on the side of management, they would hammer away at the idea that Ruth had any intelligence at all and would repeat the trope that he was a perpetual troublemaker in order to keep him out from the coaching ranks. He notes also that counterbalancing facts never got any airing. And by collectively doing all of this to keep Ruth out from selecting and from becoming a manager, owners could collectively keep the power structure of the game intact. Interestingly, Worley says that he does not believe that a owner's fear of racial integration was the reason that Ruth was denied a managerial post. He was aware of Julia Ruth Stevens' comments and said, quote, there is, however, virtually no historical evidence that Ruth had strong views at all regarding the integration of baseball. Now, of course, believing this requires the belief in a broad and secret campaign, particularly that Ed Barrow went specifically to owners and tried to talk them into not hiring Ruth. Now, even if true in part, there is reason to think that factors other than race or some sort of coordinated arrangement kept Ruth out as manager first and foremost. First, Ruth would not have been able to integrate the game without some kind of ownership support. Even if he was hired as a manager, he certainly couldn't have done so himself. Then there's the plausibility of whether multiple owners could have covertly arranged to block Ruth's path to becoming a manager without anything having been written about it until the last few years. And if they did do it, why didn't they block Ruth's path to Brooklyn also? And of course, there were many other reasons not to hire Ruth as manager, ranging from his inability as a tactician to his lack of focus, neither of which were falsely construed, and both of which would have doomed him as a prospective manager. These alternative theories may have been possible and may have been factors, but it's also likely that Ruth did not become a manager for other reasons. Now, Ruth was tied to 9 managerial positions on the major league level, 2 with the Yankees, Red Sox, Tigers, Senators, Athletics, Braves and Dodgers, maybe the Browns, and on the minor league level in Newark. And in the American League, only the Cleveland Indians and Chicago White Sox were not tied to at least a substantiated report of Ruth becoming their manager in the 1929 to 1939 window, though Montville reports in his book that there were also rumors of being tied to the White Sox and Cincinnati, too. Indeed, Ruth was in the papers for basically 10 years as a prospective manager while never being hired for the position, which is remarkable endurance for a story that never happened. And of those, maybe the Red Sox and certainly the Tigers were the only two that really stood a chance. Ruth was a victim of bad timing in the former and his own self-sabotage in the latter. But he could potentially have had both jobs, as well as the minor league one in Newark, had he made different choices. Would Ruth have been a good manager? It's hard to find anyone who thinks that he would have. Indeed, as Norman Mock has said, quote, being cool under pressure when it's just you at the bat is not the same as being cool under pressure when strategic decisions and player moves are being made. At best, he probably would have been closer to Ted Williams and Walter Johnson, stars who had difficulty relating to lesser-known players, than to Joe McCarthy and Sparky Anderson. But it's also too simplistic to say that Ruth never got seriously considered as a major league manager. He did. If only a few things had gone differently, baseball with Ruth as a manager in the 30s and 40s could have been very different. Thank you.